ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रम् अत्र स्वरूपम् रूपं तस्या गजामरुपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखा। Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuing the discussion of temples as tirthas, especially custom-built temples, temples built, well, in India is generally like that, that the temple is just a temple, not anything else. It's difficult for people to imagine, maybe if they haven't been to the West, that you're going to have a temple and then on top of it there's offices and this and that. Of course, the temple has offices and this and that, but not exactly adjoining, surrounding the temple. In Mayapur, when that first building was built, which is now called the Lotus Building, I believe, now it's merged with others, it's just in the field originally. Now, the temple was there on the ground floor, and then guest houses, offices, there was no other building of ISKCON Mayapur. So people used to criticize, how can you have anything above the deities? How can there be anything? Of course, generally the shikha, the spire, I guess that would be called in English, or dome, not exactly a dome. Spire is maybe a closer word. That would be above, but not anything that anyone uses. Like an office or residential place, even there are toilets. That's unimaginable, to have toilets in the same building as a temple. And Srila Prabhupada was always practical, and that at one time you can't build more than one building. It was built with tremendous effort in acquiring the money, bringing the money, buying the materials, getting it built. So that was the beginning. That in itself was sensational, that building. It was the best building in, maybe it was the best building in all of West Bengal at the time. It's been surpassed by other buildings at Mayapur. Well, no, I mean there was in terms of buildings, the Victoria Memorial is there in Calcutta. That's not a tirtha. It could be converted into a temple. It's a very beautiful building, but useless. Like the Taj Mahal, people go and look. What's the point? It's supposed to be a mausoleum. Why build such a building for some rotting body of someone who's probably one of the worms crawling in the earth underneath it. That's really Dehatma Buddhi gone wild, isn't it? Someone dies and you build a beautiful building. Of course, some people say it was originally a Shiva temple, but who knows? There's conspiracy theories about pretty much everything now. So yeah, the temples are custom-built temples, and there's a whole spiritual science, the Vastu Shastra, and especially the big temple design architecture. We can say Vastu Shastra and combined with Shilpa Shastra, the making sculptures and this and that, deities. We could roughly equate that with the English term architecture, but it's on a completely different basis. One thing is that the Vedic knowledge is revealed knowledge from the spiritual world, whereas architecture is developed out of people's fertile brains, as Srila Prabhupada would say. And it's various styles of architecture to express people's various delusions about everything. It's definitely not for Christ. Architecture in this material world is exactly for living comfortably within this world. Whereas the architecture of the Vedic knowledge, that is, everything is designed to help us to come live in this world so we can come out of it. And the living in it is not the most important part. The coming out is the most important part. So in that sense, we can say that the whole Shastra is Tirtha. And actually, that's another meaning of the word Tirtha, is Shastra. Because it helps us to cross over. People might not even be thinking of crossing over. They may be thinking of dharma, artha, or karma. But they know, at least in the back of their mind, that moksha is there also. Everyone in Vedic culture. Of course, particularly the Mimamsakas, they don't want to admit, or they don't want to have anything to do with moksha. But other people, there's some understanding of that. Of course, Krishna Prem, that they don't know about. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to come to give, and the Vaishnava Acharyas before him gave some hint. They gave the understanding that mukti is not just escaping. It's not a matter of just getting free from this world. That's it. Mukti in and of itself is just getting released, crossing over. But then one has to do something in spiritual existence. Specifically, one has to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, just like if you're released from a prison and you don't have anything to do, then you'll do something, but due to lack of proper guidance as to what you should do, you'll again do criminal activities and again be put in prison. Aruhya kritrena parang padang tata patantyadho anadrita yushmadangra. The people who go up to the parampadam, the spiritual level, but they don't worship Krishna, they neglect to worship Krishna's lotus feet. For all their valiant efforts in getting released, they have to come back again. They fall down again. So the temples, they are built as the big temples we're talking about here, especially the bigger temples. And you'll know more about this than I do because you've studied all these things. Gokul Chandra, who's one of the two people sitting here. Is that important? What happened? All the others got impersonal liberation. They stopped being people. Tongue in cheek. So you've studied all this for the sake of building this temple here. But the temples, they're built as a microcosm of the macrocosm. I don't know how you can translate in Tamil. If you can, you're doing pretty good. You know how to translate that? You do? There are words for it. Good. The temple as a microcosm of the macrocosm, which is the whole universe. And Vishnu or Shiva, depending on which kind of temple you're building and which Siddhanta you follow, or which understanding, either the right understanding or the wrong understanding, is installed in the temple. Actually, Shiva is Parameshvara. It's a common name for Shiva. Generally, if we say Parameshvara within India, people think of Shiva, not Krishna or Vishnu. So within the material world, he can be called Parameshvara because he is not Lakshmipati. He's Durgapati, Umapati is a more common name, Durgesh. So she is the superintendent of the material world. So he's the supreme controller within this world. And Vishnu, he maintains, but he's a little distant. He doesn't get involved so much. So to see Shiva as supreme is not a mistake per se. Just like desiring liberation is not a mistake per se, but it's lacking full knowledge of the existential position of reality. So the deity is there, and then there'll be the directions with the different dikpals overseeing them, and the shikha is Meru or Kailash may be seen as a mountain peak, and right in the Krishnamurti in Udupi, we have right there, just very in front of the deities at the side, we have the tortoise at the bottom of the universe, then the diggajas, the elephants who are holding up, and then what comes next? Anantashesha is there. Is a whole sculpture, what would you call it, of the universe? It's a three-dimensional model of the universe within the temple. Although the temple itself doesn't, it's very simple and doesn't have that kind of symbolism that we get in here in these temples over here in Tamil Nadu. And the idea, when one goes around the temple, one has to do parikrama. And then we'll see all the different avatars, and by doing the idea is you're circling the whole world and the controller of the whole world. So it establishes that he is not just here in a temple, but the whole world. He's kindly agreed to come here. Actually, he's the overseer of the whole world, but he's kindly agreed to come here so that we can worship him, with the ultimate aim to go out of this world. Of course, most people don't dare go to temples praying to go out of this world. But that's why he appears within this world. Paritranaya sadhunam, to uplift these saintly people. That's his main reason for coming. And then the whole Vedic culture is to make people into sadhus, and to make them into devotees, so that going to temples, all kinds of Vedic activities, or just living in the Vedic cultures to help us to gradually come to the proper understanding that we're not meant to live in this world. We're supposed to go out of it. Sarva karma akhilam partha jnane parisamapyate. All kinds of karmas within this material world, they culminate in jnana, in knowledge that we're not meant to be in this world, we're meant to go out of it. And then we can really take advantage of the facilities of the Vedic culture, including the temples that we're talking about just now. And here in South India especially, we see the temples there, they're so big, and then they have various prakarams, or definitely there'll be one big wall around it, but there may be several, especially in Sri Rangam. There are layers, seven, isn't it? Seven prakarams all around. And it becomes just like a city in itself. And each prakaram is suitable for, you can walk around, and also the Lord comes out and with his devotees and goes around and enjoys. It's his city, after all. So going into the temple, you go through one wall. Prakara means wall. So you go through one wall. It's all very big also. It's impressive. It's meant to impress. Actually, one can worship the Lord at home or even anywhere. Some people carry shalagram with them and do a very simple worship, and he's fully satisfied with that. But the big temples are built to give the impression on people's mind. This is important. It's not just something that's minor at the side. It's the center of our existence. And actually, here in what's now called Tamil Nadu, I'll try. The temples, they were the centers in the sense that, don't laugh at my poor pronunciation, Tondai Mandalam. Could you understand? Okay. Kanchi is the center of that. And Kanchi with the two main temples, Ekambareshwar, Shiva temple, and Varadaraja, Vishnu temple, and that's the center. And then Tanjavur, with that temple is made there, another Shiva temple, Brihadishwara temple, and that becomes the center of the whole Chola Mandalam. These names are still famous in Tamil Nadu. The Cholas, the Pandyas, Pandya Mandalam. Center is Madurai with Meenakshi temple. Sundareshwar is also there. Her husband, Shiva. But it's known as Meenakshi temple. Very nice name, huh? She has eyes like fishes, the shape of a fish. Not fish eyes in the sense of round gaping eyes, but tapered and very beautiful. So in this way, the temple, it's something very big and very important. And in the very meaning of making it very big is to impress on people's mind there's something very important. And we see in the West also, if we see the old buildings throughout Europe, going back hundreds of years, there aren't many. There are only two kinds of buildings you'll find which are hundreds of years old. One is castles, in which the kings lived, and it was all heavily fortified. That's to show off their their power and glory, and also to protect themselves from invaders, other kings who attack them. And the other buildings are, the old, very old buildings are churches. And the churches are more beautiful, generally, because the castles, they're meant for defense, whereas the churches are meant for glorifying the Lord. And yeah, there are actually in England, there's a famous building, the Houses of Parliament. That's also old. But there are many churches which are much older than the Houses of Parliament. And actually, the most famous building in the biggest religious institution of the in the world, the Roman Catholic Church, is the Vatican complex with St. Paul's Basilica and so on in Rome. And that was deliberately built as a countermeasure to Protestantism, which was sweeping Europe as anti-papism. They didn't... One of the main things in Protestantism, you have to hate the Pope. Nowadays, less so, but it's like in Ritvikism. The main thing is not to love Prabhupada, but to hate the gurus in ISKCON. So it's something like that. So the Counter-Reformation, where they made this beautiful church with all beautiful marble and beautifully designed and beautiful paintings, and it's really spectacular, and it gives an impression when you go there, and that's the deliberately they wanted to make the impression that this is something very important for the glorification of God. This is not something small. It's not just, in other words, not just functional. You need a big building for many worshippers to gather, but the very size of it also makes an impression that this is something very important. Some years ago, I was visiting a city in England, Newcastle upon Tyne, and I was driving from the station to the town, I was talking with the town president. I hadn't been there for many, many years. And I'm not very familiar with the city. So I asked him about the cathedral and this and that. There must be, presumably there's a cathedral. It's a big and old city. And then as we were driving, he pointed out, and in the distance we could see this football stadium. He said, that is the cathedral. And actually, yeah, thousands of people gather and people take it far more seriously than what people used to gather for. Of course, we have in ancient Rome also the amphitheater. You can see, if I don't know the word in Russian. You're grimacing there. It's an ancient stadium, which was built for chariot racing and gladiator fighting. So they also had entertainment. In Greece also, the Pantheon, just for secular activities, ancient. But the fact is that when Rome became more interested in secular activities like sports, that was a sign of the beginning of the end of their empire. As long as it's based on God, even at a very immature level or undeveloped level in ancient Rome, a worship of the gods who ancient Rome, ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, ancient everywhere, they had gods which are analogous or almost, you can say, they're like the demigods in Vedic culture. They're probably the demigods, but without full understanding. So the Jupiter, Apollo, if he goes through the days of the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, well, actually thereafter the Vedic, not the Vedic, the Norse gods they're named after. So they worship, but when people became more interested in entertainment and sense enjoyment than making offerings to the gods, that is the sure sign of the decline of a civilization. So since the early 20th century, it's been noted by anthropologists, I guess that would be, that Western civilization is already on its way down. Because, yeah, there are certain signs that we can see. One reason why British people were prepared to go all over the world and establish their civilization, which, as they call it, and still most of the world is, including the British, of course, are under the impression that Britain, the sign of, or the very paragon of civilization is Britain. I don't know why. I mean, I was born in Britain. I really don't see anything that sets them apart. But one reason that they were prepared to go, and it was very difficult for them to go to all these foreign countries and in different places, and the heat in so many places, and mix with so many natives, horrible natives, uncivilized people. They don't even speak English. How can they be civilized? One reason they did that was the idea that Christianity, we're spreading Christianity. We're bringing real civilization to people. Civilization means it has to be Christianity. So the French and Italians, the Russians, begrudgingly they could be considered civilized at some level because at least they're Christians of some sort or other. But then as they became more and more inclined to sense enjoyment, then the whole thing is lost. So like that. The temples and the churches, they're very important for establishing in people's minds the importance of religion. Otherwise, just like Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, when the Krishna Balaram temple was under construction, so someone asked that, you see, your followers of the six Goswamis who slept under a different tree every night, and why are you building a big temple? How are you following the six Goswamis? And Prabhupada said, I don't need it for me. I need it for, this temple is for you, because if I was sitting under a tree, you wouldn't come and see me. I have to preach to you, I have to tell you. But you wouldn't take me seriously unless this temple is there. When Srila Prabhupada visited Hong Kong, I think he only went there once, I'm not sure. But he went there and Purijan Prabhu, who was preaching there, doing his best in very difficult circumstances, he had rented the most expensive suite in the most important or most expensive hotel. I think it was the Hilton Hotel in Hong Kong. Very, very, very costly. And then when Prabhupada arrived, he called the press, the reporters, to come and see Prabhupada. And one of them put the question, one of the reporters asked Srila Prabhupada, that you see, you're preaching against materialism, but you're staying in the very expensive suite in the most costly hotel. How does that fit? And Prabhupada said, I can stay anywhere But if I wasn't here, you wouldn't have come to see me. And they understood. That's true. They wouldn't have come if they'd have gone to some little ramshackle apartment. The reporters wouldn't have come. But when they see it's a very costly this, that, then they think, oh, must be something important. Prabhupada's importance was not increased by his staying in an important apartment, but or when he was wandering the streets, as he put it himself in 1965, 1966 in New York City, it wasn't that Prabhupada was any less than when he was later recognized as a world acharya. But in people's minds, people need this kind of thing to impress them that this is something very important. So I was talking about the Mahatmyas in the temples in the south. They're often called the Stala Purana. They may also include the story, the history of how the temple came to be built, and this updated Stala Puranas. They describe how the Lord came here, and then how the temples were built and the kings who did that. I remember the first time that I came to Sri Rangam. It must have been about 1990. And you're going through the Rajagopuram, which was just new at that time. It's still newer compared to the others. And going through, and then we walked through, and I was surprised to see that there are all shops there. Because I thought this is a temple and just ordinary shops. And as soon as you go through, the first thing that you notice is what, when you go through? The smell of coffee. Because on the left side, there's that coffee shop, right? They sell ground coffee, essential for all the brahmanas there. They need good coffee to keep them going. Coffee. So I was surprised. And then you go on, and there's more shops. And selling all kinds of things. Not meat, of course, not alcohol, but all kinds of... In holy places, you see shops where they sell pictures of the deities and little books about the deities, and there are stalls where they sell garlands to offer the deities, but just regular shops. Cloth shops and grocery shops, all kinds of things mixed with... So I was surprised by that, but then... Later I understood that this is Ranganath Swami's place, and these are the people who live there under him, and there's a whole town, and he's the boss in the town, and the people are living their normal lives with him in the center. So yeah, sure there are going to be shops. If you go to Ayodhya at the time of Sri Ram, the time of Dasharath, there are descriptions, there are so many merchants. Of course there are merchants, because that's required in a city. But the difference between Ayodhya or Sri Rangam and other cities is that the Supreme Lord is in the center. And actually, the Lord lives in the temple. It's like his home. He lives there. He eats there. He sleeps there. He bathes there, he receives guests. He's a big important man, of course, the most important. So he's the king, so the astrologer comes daily and reads out, still going on, that the descendants of Sri Rangam, descendants of Parashara Bhatta, they're the astrologers. So in some ways, he's like an ordinary person. In some ways, he's living among us. It's in great contrast to the kind of holy places which are very difficult to reach. You have to walk such a long distance over so many mountains and very hard to reach. But just in contrast, The temples which are built in big cities, he's very easy to reach. Very easy to find. That even if you go to the heavenly planets, you may not get such a facility as if you're living in a, of course, temples may be anywhere, but if the temple is in the town, then people from they can come. In Bombay, before Srila Prabhupada founded that temple, there were so many, in Juhu, there were so many Vaishnavas. The main population, of course, it's very cosmopolitan, but the main population were Gujaratis, who are mostly devotees of Srinathji, and Marathis, who, thanks to Lokmanya Tilak, think that their most important deity is Ganesh. Otherwise, they're mostly worshippers of Pandharapur, Vittal. And others are there also, they're everywhere. All of India is in Bombay, but especially at that time is mostly Gujaratis, actually, and then Marathis also. But there was, typically Gujaratis don't build big temples. In the Vallabh tradition, and Pandharpur also is not it's not a big temple, so they don't have that tradition. So Prabhupada made a big temple for everyone to come and worship Krishna, to come, so that they may still go to Nathdwara, but they don't have to go once a year. They can come often, at least at the weekend, and Srila Prabhupada established their deities of Sitaram, Lakshman and Hanuman also, and also Sri Sri Gauranitai, so that people, they can come regularly and take darshan. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for today. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpatarupyascha kripa sindhu vivacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami Maharaj ki.